Pushkin.
Never before has a TV show come along with a soundtrack so incredibly haunting that I couldn't shake it. That's what happened when I first heard the score for writer and director Mike White's HBO show, White Lotus. Cristobal Tapia Devere is the composer and musician behind all the sounds in the score that range from percussive African and Latin instruments to guttural human chants. When I first heard the show's theme that you're hearing now, I was all in. It sounded like some sort of crazy deranged version of Herbie Hancock's Watermelon Man. Cristobal Tapia Devere is a Chilean composer based in Canada who studied classical music at the Music Conservatory in Quebec. After dabbling in electronic music production and playing drums in various bands, Devere's first big break as a composer came from his score for the British thriller Utopia. On today's episode, I talked to Devere about how he came up with White Lotus's striking soundscape. He plays the stems from the score and talks about how he initially set out to create a Hawaiian Hitchcock sound. Devere also explains how he created the signature tribal-sounding vocals from the show after being summoned to California by Kanye West.
This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond.
Here's my interview with Cristobal Tapia Devere. How did you get approached even for the show to begin with?
They called me in January and they sent a script, and I loved the script. I thought it was one of the best scripts I've read in a long time. So I took the meeting with Mike, and I don't know, he was great. Like he's a pretty easygoing guy, at least to me. We talk a little bit. We made some jokes about, doing a Hawaiian Hitchcock and this and that. He didn't want, comedic music, like a typical comedy show music or anything like that. And then I went back to the studio, and for about 3 weeks, I was just recording nonstop.
But Hawaiian Hitchcock, that was your phrase. That was your way of thinking about it.
Yeah. I told him that, but it's not because of the style or trying to emulate Bernard Herrmann or, anything like that. It's just that he wanted to feel that something might be happening, something's bubbling underneath what's happening there. And it feels like somebody's going to die, somebody is going to be sacrificed, whatever, anything like that. So I guess I'm supposed to bring people's attention to other things that what's obvious. What's interesting for me lately is that, like, I've been doing lots of interviews more than usual for the show, for the music, because people, like you said, people are really, I don't know, something happened with the music. Something is touching people about this. And the thing is, I'm really more a musician, I'm going to say, than, let's say, a composer, because in the sense that, I had this little talk with Mike, and then I go to the studio and my brain is processing stuff, but I'm not thinking about any of it. I don't have graphics and designs and calculations about what the music is exactly doing to every character and every moment. And then at the end, you know that this is going to happen and people are going to feel like this. It's not a master plan whatsoever. It's really, really like super, super spontaneous and very fast. And then it's done. And afterwards, when people started, asking me about this, I realized I didn't know what to say. So there wasn't like a thought about doing things a certain way. There's, for example, the voices, like the lead voices. I wanted the lead vocals to feel like just a human singing. Right. But there is some processing, but it's not a processing that you feel like it's a digital processing, like auto-tune or whatever. It's gonna make you feel like this sound, this from pop music. You have all these auto-tune notes that are all very straight and perfect and stuff. So we are used to that digital sound now. So I didn't want to go with digital effects. For example, I was changing the pitch of the voice by changing the speed, which is the oldest trick in the book. Like you have tape and you just play the tape down and you have a lower note. So that's the basic idea. I think it's less detrimental to a natural voice. at least for me, for what I needed to do, I mean. So you have these singing voices that are doing stuff that if you try to sing it, you're not going to be able to because there's something weird happening. Like there's something not human about it because I changed the notes in a way that a person couldn't do. So you feel the raw quality.
There's jumps in the notes. Yeah. The dramatic jumps.
Yeah. So you have this quality that it's a real voice. It's not a robot sample or something. But there's something that you can't point your finger on, but you feel there's something weird happening. And maybe that's upsetting too, in a way, because I'm wondering if people feel about that the way they feel, you know, when you watch a horror movie and you have a character that's a human, but then you realize there's something weird about that human, that it is not quite a human. There's something odd. And this is actually more scary than monsters, I think, in general. It's when you believe there's something like you, and it's not like you at all. It's something that's hiding there. There might be some danger or whatever.
Yeah. How did you decide on the instrumentation? Like, so when you leave that meeting with Mike and you kind of leave with Hawaiian Hitchcock sort of in mind, did you immediately know what instruments you wanted to maybe use, or did you have to kind of lay out some and try? And it kind of, was it a process of elimination on the instruments?
It was more by addition, I would say, in the sense that I just started recording some shakers for a while. And then after when I had those shakers, then I can play something else. So I'm jamming with myself, just going to play some other drums. And then when I have those drums, I'm going to again start over and I'm listening to everything I recorded previously. So it's basically just jams. And I believe everything I recorded in the end, I did use because once I had all these percussion beds and whatnot, I could decide whether I might need a little bit of pianos later on or just a little whatever other instruments. Maybe it's because we didn't have much time. It was very fast, so there was not much thinking, and I wasn't in a mode where I'm gonna. I'm going to try something for a while and maybe it doesn't work. So I'll try something else. In this case, it has to work. Like I'm recording all this stuff and in my mind, this is working like all the time. Whatever I'm doing is just working and I'm moving forward.
That's not how you typically work, I imagine, right?
It depends. I mean, if you have lots of time, of course, there's lots of procrastination, which is not good either. So I suppose, any composer in general would complain not having the time to do what they want to do, being too rushed or something. But I think there's something good about it. For me, this feels a lot more spontaneous. I think that it could be if I spent a year in the studio with do the usual thing, you call the best musicians in town and whatever, and it's just everything takes forever and you're doing these pristine recordings and stuff. This is very homemade. It feels very raw. It feels uncorrected, unproduced.
Were you happy with it when you turned it in?
Oh, yeah. I was really happy. I was happy that that Mike liked it first because... I mean, there's an adjustment period where the first time people get tracks for their shows is a bit scary. You don't know how they're going to react and they need time to digest, which is normal, particularly if you're sending non-standard music. But in this case, it went really well and there's only Mike. I mean, there's only one person. I mean, he's the creator of this thing and he's doing everything. So, there are other executives and whatnot, but what I mean is like he was the main focus, I mean, what he wanted. So it's faster and much easier in unless you have a problem with that one person, then that's it. But it's much easier not having that, 25 cooks in the kitchen.
We'll be right back with Cristobal Tapia de Vere after a quick break. We're back with more of my conversation with Cristobal Tapia de Vere.
So when you sat down to create the sound and the music for this show, what's the first thing you recorded that actually made it to the final mix?
It's probably the second piece of music on the show. When the show starts, they're like this old school music, something jazzy. And then right after that, we see a big shot of the hotel. And that is like a very loud track with the same voices that you find in the theme, but is more of a wild tribal thing. You want me to show you what the voices are?
Please.
So okay, so that's the lead from the theme, and then so this in particular, that beat there. So that's the first voices I tried, and I put it on that track, and it worked, and they liked it.
What was the thought that led to it? Was it like, I want to play with odd vocals, with just strange voices?
There is this tribal aspect, this war cry aspect, all of these things that fit well with what we wanted to convey with the show. So it could be associated with many things. You know, it could be natives that have been abused forever by, you know, the white privilege and everything. So could be that there's some of that. It could be some kind of ritualistic kind of singing. There is that aspect. There is the pop aspect that is purely aesthetic that to me, when I found this way of playing those voices, to me, it felt like that's it. Like that's a hit. I mean, I don't know a hit, like a radio hit or something like that, but it's a hit in the sense that the way it hits you, it hits people. I can tell that this does an effect. There's something like alien, but at the same time, people are really curious and it's like, wow, what is that voice and stuff? So it just felt right away like I had found some gold there.
You definitely did. Where did the voice sounds come from?
So there's this weird story where I met Kanye West at some point. I didn't really meet him. I mean, he called me and he bought me a plane ticket. And this was like, I have no idea what he wants. Like, it's Kanye West. So this is a couple of years ago. And it's like, okay, well, sure. I thought it was a joke. I mean, until I got to LA, I thought somebody's playing a trick. And when I talked to him on the phone, I said, okay, this guy sounds like Kanye West, but you never know. I mean, it's so weird. And it's not like I'm producing whatever, you know, the new singer or something. It's just I'm doing these weird projects and stuff. So, but I mean, he's looking for weird stuff too. So I guess. But anyhow, at some point I got to LA and I went to his place where he works and everything in Calabasas and stuff. And then I was trying to understand what he wanted, but because this guy, he's always, you know, talking about a million things at the same time. I mean, he was showing me this new Nike shoe and speaking about music and how this Nike shoe relates to music. And it was like a new prototype. And then there's some kids that come from another room with some other prototype. And then we walk to another room and we start looking at all his clothes, the new stuff that he's coming with. And still, you know, all this time, I have no idea what's happening. I don't know why I'm there, why he's showing me all this stuff. But anyhow, I did have my laptop and I started to work on some stuff. And my minding is, since it's Kanye West, I was at the hotel and I was trying to find something that is really striking. Because if he takes me there, I mean, I'm not just going to do some R&B beat or whatever. You know, I have to come up with something. And this is what happened, and not this tune in particular, but I had those voices and I tried to find a way to play melodies that is a really striking thing. And this happened by accident. And I was like, at that point, I knew that this was like gold. And I was, okay, this I'm going to show to Kanye. So anyhow, I was there for like a week and I had to leave and there was problems and Kanye started firing people and his lawyers and everything was too long and I had to leave. So whatever. It was a mess. So just to say this, as it's like, I'm going to say it's maybe a month before he came out of the closet as a Trump supporter. So I didn't know about that. I would probably not have gone there if I knew, but so it was, there was lots of changing happening in his life and everything. So I just left at some point, and I was like, okay, he'll call me back whenever he needs something. I don't know. So I had those voices, the system, meaning, you know, there's a girl doing and stuff. And then I was playing with it, with samples and stuff. So I could do any harmonizing or whatever. At that point, it doesn't really matter what exactly the melody is. It's just that system. And then, yeah, so this project came up and I was, man, those tribal voices, that's exactly what we need for this. So I just went back to my system there and started finding the right melody and stuff. And that's it. It became that. So that particular harmony, the last one I show you just now, that's the one I did for Kanye, which he never heard.
He never heard it?
He never heard it. So because we never got to somewhere with that. So I don't know what was happening over there. So lately I've been like thinking about that, and it's like, I hope this guy listened to the White Lotus and he's like everybody else. Okay, who's that guy? And he's the same guy who made it for you a couple of years ago.
It's crazy to think that could have been a Kanye West song. It would have been perfect for Kanye.
Yeah.
Can you play that sound again? Can you play those voices one more time?
Yeah. So I'm playing for from the beginning.
Was this part of it as well?
No, just this one.
I never heard the laughing before.
Yeah, because there's so much happening, I guess, you know, it's in the chaos in there.
Super cool. So once you had that, what was the thought? What was the move?
Yeah, the main thing with this show is the percussions, really. I recorded maybe for 2 weeks, stacking lots of every percussion that I have. So, for example, I think I started with the toms. So it's like, I'm going to say there's maybe a kick drum, a floor tom, and then some indigenous percussions like shaman drums, which are all with animal skins and stuff like that. And I started doing this kind of thing. So I did a bit of this, lots of different rhythms with only these low drums that are softer and kind of deeper. And then I started adding all kind of things like this. And then later building. Stuff like that. Then I started playing with bottles and flutes.
And were you playing them actually, or was it a sample of someone playing them?
Oh yeah. It's all live, all that stuff. So the bottles is something like this. So, okay, this is when I discovered how the Watermelon Man works. Because I never thought of Watermelon Man until I said, okay, I'm going to try this bottle thing. So I do this, whoo. And then at some point I tried to do this repeatedly and I realized I have to breathe a lot. So I do whoo. And when I hear my voice going there, it's like, oh, that's why it sounds like that. That thing is just, it's just your throat, you know, it makes a sound and then you have this rhythm and it's just natural. And it's like, oh, that's it. That's how that works. So, yeah, I just jumped with the bottles and tried to do that stuff. And then the flutes, it's similar. Okay, so this track is just that. I stacked maybe 4 or 6 flutes to make that one line, the harmonies. Okay, so you can hear me there a little bit of my voice. I'm the is that, but there's some other tracks on the show where you can really hear this kind of and the breathing and everything. So those cover all the anxiety of the breathing and the lacking air and somehow, you know, claustrophobic thing. There's lots of that in general in the show. And then have some keys. Okay, so that's the same as the flutes. It's just adding a little bit of color there.
And how did you decide on that sound?
I'm not sure. I wanted a little kind of a ska, reggae kind of thing. I suppose it's kind of a reverb-y keyboard that just fit with the flutes.
But it also sounds like what you might hear if you were like clubbing on a private island, like at Ibiza or something, like that might be like,
yeah,
Ibiza with a demented twist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's an aspect of the score that it's very minimalistic, but it's there, is that there are dance little things here and there, like this bright clap sometimes when it comes. It's almost like a 4 on the floor sometimes on certain versions. I don't know how to call it, but electronic dancey cheesiness here and there, you know, some elements of, you know, just party, rave, or whatever you want to call it. But, and then afterwards, I have some effects in there. Okay, some people screaming. Okay, so that's just the chaos, you know, happening. The birds, people screaming and stuff, and it's not when you hear the song, this is not clear, but it feels like you're somewhere, and maybe there's people fighting somewhere in the back, or you know, stuff like that. Those are like the basic elements.
Had you played those instruments before? Like, are those your instruments that like go-to instruments in your arsenal?
Percussions, I suppose. I always do lots of percussions, I think, in general, but not as much of this. In this, I was allowed to be more, I would say, maybe a little more tribal, more all out, you know, jungle feeling music. No, not jungle music, the style, but like I could make music like as if I was in the jungle.
I mean, so a lot of the instruments are like kind of like African pygmy.
I have lots of Latin American and African instruments, and lately I've been buying more African instruments because lots of Latin American instruments have a background in Africa, obviously. So, for example, in this show, I use a cuica, which is Latin America from South America, but there is an African version of that. In Latin America, the one we use, it's made of metal. And we use it in like batucada and all these big festivities. So it's a loud instrument that sounds like a monkey. Basically, it's like a monkey talking or screaming and stuff like that. So lots of the monkey sounds in the show are not samples from monkeys, but it's this instrument. I mean, all these congas, like for example, congas is the most like, you know, Cuban, Latin American thing you can think of. But I have like... other versions from Africa and from other instruments like the dundun, which are like huge congas with skins on both sides, and it sounds even more raw than the Latin American version. I have lots of stuff like that that I use in here that are not, I suppose, that are not Hawaiian, but that serve the purpose, which wasn't to try to make like Hawaii music or it's not a Hawaiian sound at all. Some people have talked about that they feel like, oh, it's so cool with the music. You feel like you're in Hawaii, but it's really not.
Yeah.
But it's more about the people who are there, their wild minds, you know, their dangerous minds, all that stuff. It's more an imagery like that.
It's a lot in the writing too, and just in the way the characters were played and the tension between them. But the music definitely propelled it the same way, like, you know, when you're watching Vertigo, it's Hitchcock, so you know, you might know something's going to happen, but just from the start of the movie, if you didn't know it's Hitchcock, it could go any way, and the music really drives your viewing experience, you know?
I think Mike's a genius, really. Whatever that means. I mean, there's so many definitions of genius. For me personally, my experience, I think he's a genius because of what he allows to happen. I felt like even when he felt a little bit scared about something that I would send or whatever, he was always allowing me to try stuff and maybe to be wrong about something, to make mistakes or whatever, or to do really weird things, because he's looking for, interesting ideas. And then sometimes some people, you're going to try something, and when you're even starting something, they're going to put you down. It's like, no, don't think like that. No, we're not doing this. And it's like, we need to go somewhere and then talk about it and then more further and stuff. But I have to say, it's really weird. It's like he knew what the music was doing and how people were going to react. And he somehow told me that this reaction I've been seeing to the show and to the music, it's like he told me that in advance, like that was going to happen. And I have no idea how he would know that.
What do you say?
Well, that it's crazy what the music is doing and people are going to go crazy and they're not going to stop calling you and this and that. And I was like, for me in my head, I was trying something. I was kind of happy, but I was also expecting, I don't know how people are going to feel about this. Maybe it's too weird. This has happened to me in the past where I'm proposing something with the music and I get this idea that people are going to destroy me. They're going to say that I destroyed the show and whatnot. So this was one of those shows. I was like, maybe it's cool or maybe it's really, really completely not the moment for this. It's not going to work. I don't know, man. All this precaution stuff. I really, I had no idea. But he seemed more confident than me.
We'll be back with more from my interview with Cristobal Tapia de Vere after a quick break. We're back with Cristobal Tapia de Vere. Since the show's come out, are you getting more work? And is it work that you want to do? Or
yes. Short answer is yes. It's been overwhelming, I'm going to say. And I'm kind of adapting to it because it's like people went crazy, really. I mean, and when I say this, it's like literally, I have some people, me and my manager, we had to block because we were getting like it was abusive. Like they started like straight to me, like some agents. I'm speaking those kind of people. And it's like you tell me, okay, I don't have the time for this. I'm okay. I don't need help. And then right away, it's like texting you. One text after the other. It's like you have some kind of, fucked up partner that's gone psycho. It's like, what's happening, man? It's these people. So that's one thing. And then I have all the Marvels and Disney and all the people that I've never worked with because myself, it's too weird or too exotic. I don't know exactly. But now everybody's interested and I have all these people and stuff and I'm refusing everything just because I'm on a movie right now.
Right.
And that's it. So one of the things I'm confronted with now is that You know, I don't do the composer thing of having a team of, you know, writers and composers and, you know, helpers that sometimes they do all the job for me. And sometimes, you know, if it's a very big project, you know, maybe it's more me. So I don't understand that stuff. That's really, to me, that's just greed, but it's like beyond greed. Yeah. And yeah, I would love to be a multimillionaire, like whoever does, you know, Batman and stuff, but I'm not a manager. I'm not a boss. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to check, you know, all these people that are working for me and navigating all this stuff. This is just, it's super weird. And I never going to, I don't think I'm going to do this, you know, 5 movies in a year. It's like, I don't understand how these people, they do that. You see this IMDb from composer and they have like 200 credits. It's like, it's so weird to me.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to explain to them that, you know, I'm thank you so much. And I'm not refusing because I don't want to do your project or anything. It's just that, but for them, this is really alien. They don't understand why I'm refusing stuff because nobody refuses. They take everything and they do everything. And it's like, to me, it's a little bit McDonald's. It's like, I don't want to do chain work or something.
Yeah.
I want to me, everything is housemade. It's homemade and it's like I'm doing everything. It is a little bit slower, but I do one thing, the one project, and that's it. And then the next project. What's cool though is that it seems like there's something happening which I never seen since I started doing this. It's like I started somewhere with Utopia where I'm kind of like a weird punk Latino that's doing some weird stuff, but it makes lots of noise, Utopia, even though it wasn't like a hit, like in numbers.
Right.
It was a hit in a way because to this day, anybody, anywhere, whether I'm in London or in LA or whatever, people will speak about that. They're going to tell me, man, that show, every department, the art, the music, it was really something. So and now the White Lotus seems to have done that in the US because the Utopia was more of a UK thing.
Right.
But now with the White Lotus, it feels like I'm less of an alien now, but they're calling me because that's the thing. Like somehow it's becoming the thing. Like this, they want to be completely surprised, completely. They want something else. Like it's like all of a sudden they're tired of this Hollywood sound. They don't want that anymore. They want in your face. They want melodies. They want you know, the music to be a character, this and that. And of course, maybe they're excited. You have to see if that's possible, because of course, you know, with people putting lots of money into projects, then they hear something weird and they become scared. And it's like, oh, wait a minute.
A lot of pressure with that. A lot of pressure comes with that. If you can be the one, though, to bring, you know, melodies back into this and just really de-McDonaldize, you know.
Yeah, de-McDonaldize. That's so true, man.
Be appreciated.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
Thanks to Cristobal Tapia de Vere for taking us through the Stems first theme for the show, White Lotus. You can hear his work by checking out a playlist we made on BrokenRecordPodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Martin Gonzalez, Eric Sandler, Jennifer Sanchez, and with engineering help from Nick Chafee. Our executive producer is Mia LaBelle. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin Industries, consider becoming a Pushnik. Pushnik is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushnik exclusively on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.